All right. Hi, everyone. Welcome to today's session on From Fixed to Flexible, Rethinking Life Insurance Premium Structures to Rebuild Trust and Consumer Affordability. We've heard a lot about trust and affordability in insurance over the last 3 days. And if you're in this room, no doubt those concepts and that tension doesn't need any explanation. So I'm excited to explore some of the possible solutions. What else is being done around the world to address these issues? And joining us for this presentation are two experienced life reinsurance actuaries, Ludi and Adrian. Adrian has had a diverse career across valuation, pricing, strategy, business ownership, distribution and product roles. And originally from Ireland, he's been in Australia for almost 2 decades. And he was just telling me about how he enjoys coaching his kids' soccer and rugby and playing himself. Some of the challenges that go with over 45 soccer, which I can relate to watching my husband's games. Sorry. Touché. Ludi's a qualified actuary as well and a recent graduate of my leadership program. And she has nearly a decade of experience in the life insurance industry, 6 years in reinsurance and 3 years in direct insurance. So please join me in welcoming Adrian and Ludi to the stage.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Hope everyone's had a good lunch, that you haven't eaten too much and you'll be lively. So today we're going to talk about, I'm going to talk a bit about trust, and then Ludi's probably going to bring the real content and talk about different things from around the world. So just starting off, trust, I think, and please stick up your hand if you disagree, but as an industry, like, it's the most fundamental thing we have. We have to have trust. Our customers have to trust us, because there's no way, if they don't trust us, that they're going to be willing to, you know, put their long-term financial security or the well-being of their loved ones in our hands so if something goes wrong in the future. So trust, hugely important. Anyone disagree? Anyone? Everyone agree? Okay. Not a lot of hands up either way. So, Righto. So we're going to think about a few possible models of trust. So most of you guys will probably have seen different models of trust. So Net Promoter Score is pretty, you know, common in the market. It's used around, you know, customer service interactions, things like that. It's a very simple question. You have an interaction, and at the end of the call, you ask them, you know, would you recommend this product or service to your family or friends? Immediate feedback, very simplistic. Probably doesn't help give us a good sense of the overall trust in the insurance industry, though. There's much more complicated models like Edelman's Trust Barometer. This is a whole global model that, like, if you Google it and look it up, there's hugely detailed reports around different industries and everything else. Probably too complicated for us to think about today. You've got the 5 dimensions of trust, more models. I think this was Porterman's one. But there's sort of common themes across each one, which is around competence, ethical behavior, transparency, those sorts of things. So I think if any of us thought, why do you trust someone? You'd probably come up with words like this. So for the presentation today, we're going to focus on the trust equation, which I believe someone talked about on Monday, I believe. I didn't miss that, but they did anyway. So trustworthiness is your credibility, your reliability, your professional intimacy and self-orientation. So pretty simple. You're obviously trying to maximize the T. Probably the one around self-orientation is probably the only complicated element of this. And it's very much around, you know, is the person out for themselves, in which case they'd get a high score, which would reduce the trust, or are they very much selfless and doing things for your interests, which would push up the trust score? Credibility, reliability, and intimacy is really, you know, can you do what you say? Do you actually do what you say? And intimacy is sort of, do you really know each other kind of thing? So trust model. So thinking about that in practice in life insurance, it's like, I like using this model all the time for relationship management and everything else. But in life insurance, if you think about it, to actually have someone purchase one of our products, at the outset, trust is going to have to be very high. It's going to be high because, A, they've identified a need. They've come to us on the basis that we know what we're doing. We'll have had to have given them good service along the way, even though sometimes that might take 30, 40, 50, 60 days, depending on the complexity. We'll get to know each other really well, and the customer will have to believe that over the long term, we're going to be there to look after them. So at the outset, it's going to be very high. But as we issue long-term contracts, over time, it's going to fall. Like, there's no avoiding it. Very few interactions. They get a letter a year off us. They might ring to make a, you know, make an adjustment or whatever else. So all else being equal, trust is going to fall over time. And, you know, it's very hard to do anything around that. I think if we think about what's gone on in the insurance industry over the last decade, there's been a lot of noise out there, a lot of scandal, a lot of, you know, investigations, royal commissions, bad press, those things. So all those things will, you know, help push trust down as well. So actually measuring trust, though, in the industry, you know, we kind of thought about what are the proxies we could have. And one of the proxies we thought about was, well, how many people are actually buying insurance or have insurance today? This chart, there's a lot going on in it, but it effectively, what it shows is pretty much across the board, despite growth in, you know, the workforce and everything else, the number of insured lives is falling in pretty much every channel, to be honest, everywhere it's fallen. So there's less people insured today than there was probably 10 years ago. You know, you can point to things like PYS and that in super would have had an impact, but, you know, it's still falling overall. And, you know, group has started to pick up again recently, but it's lower than it was. So on that measure, if the amount of people who hold our products is a measure of trust, we've gone a bit backwards. Lapse rates. This is from APRA. I saw Stephen come in. So APRA's in the room, so that's great. Thanks, Stephen. So lapse rates have been really high in retail advice. What's amazing is that they're higher in retail advice than direct, because I can't remember anyone ever pricing that would happen. It's always meant to be lower in retail. But lapse rates have been high and much higher than we expect. So customers aren't holding on to our policies either. And if you ever jump online and try and find feedback, it's quite easy to find. You actually do find some positive feedback around claims and customer service, but it's very easy to find poor feedback around premium outcomes. So that's sort of, you know, do people trust us? So we thought about it in three categories. So first, service. We've given ourselves a tick on this one. We actually think the industry's done a really good job over the last 10 years. The life code, the quality of service, you know, it's actually really good. If someone actually deals with us, they get a good experience. So we've given that a tick. Hopefully everyone agrees. On claims, we're going to give ourselves a tick as well, because when you look at all the stats out there, the amount of claims we pay is, it's a huge proportion paid. The volume of complaints is very low. You know, if we find a problem, the industry is quite good at trying to resolve it and fix it. And we've got lots of controls and mechanisms in place. So we think we're good on claims as well. On premiums, though, which is where we'll get on to next, we're not so sure. If you think about the environment on premiums, it's, and, you know, there was some comms from the regulator last week, you know, lots of instability around premiums, uncertainty and things like that. So we kind of think this is the one space that there's an opportunity for improvement. So with that, I'm going to hand over to Ludi, who's going to take us through lots of thinking on this space. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Adrian. So in the last section, we talked about trust. So how do we measure trust, why it's important to the life insurance industry, and how it's currently lacking in the Australian retail market. We also concluded that trust is probably most eroded when insurers increase premiums, and this is reflected by the high lapse rates that we've seen in the market. And in this section, we'll look at some practices in the international markets, and we'll try to assess the overall trust levels in those markets by mainly looking at the lapse rates. So after talking to actuaries working in five key global markets, we think it's important to focus on three main areas. So the premium structures used in those markets, if there are any market initiatives that are adopted efficiently in the international markets to manage lapse, and also the products and distribution channels used in those markets. And then we'll look at the actual lapse rates in those markets, which give us an indication of the trust level. So in terms of premium structures, what we have learned is that across four markets, so these are Canada, US, UK, and China, level premium is the dominant premium structure. And actually, step premium is only offered as an option to complex product. In South Africa, step premium does have a market, but it is believed to be mainly for customers with short-term focus. There are also different types of level structures. So in Canada, level premiums are guaranteed for a fixed term, and this is typically 10 or 20 years, and this is referred to as the T10 or T20 product. At the end of the guaranteed term, the policy will get automatically renewed to another level term with a much higher premium, or it gets converted into a whole of life policy, and both renewal and conversion don't require underwriting. U.S. has a similar structure, but instead of renewing to another level term, it typically renews to a step premium structure. And despite the increase at the time of renewing being much smaller, the take-up rate for this renewal is still considered quite low, and this is because people's expectation of the exponential increase in price in the future. If a U.S. customer wants to have another level policy, then a new policy needs to be issued and underwriting is required, and this is different from the structure in Canada. In UK and China, it is more common to see level premium guarantee for the full term of the policy. So in terms of guarantee premiums, actually all five markets offer guarantee premiums as the standard market offering, and the guarantee term is typically exceeding 10 years. This is also the case for the step premium in South Africa. So despite your premium will increase with age, these premiums are actually guaranteed and not subject to repricing. Also for Canada and US, the renewal premiums, which are shown in the graphs, are also guaranteed. And these are actually disclosed to the customers upfront, so customers know what they expect well in advance. In terms of investment feature product, limited payment terms are very popular in countries like China and Canada. So this is referring to just paying one single premium or just a few premiums. So this is popular because it increases certainty, and also this is well received by the customers. For upfront discounts, actually none of the countries rely on large upfront discounts like we do here in Australia. Instead, the wellness-linked discounts are more commonly used, and this will link the premium incentives with customers' long-term behavior and engagement. So if we compare the premium structures that are adopted internationally against what we have in Australia here, which we have a dominated non-guaranteed step premium market with quite frequent repricing and also the unwinding of large upfront discount, it is quite clear that the international market has a much more certain and stable premium structure. And this is likely to result in lower lapse rates and potentially a reflection of higher trust levels in those markets. There are some market initiatives that are efficiently adopted internationally to manage lapse. So in South Africa, the wellness program is very well known and popular and successful. So basically, it will reward healthy lives with discounts and benefits, and it will help with the long-term retention of healthy lives. And that will also reduce the overall claim experience in the risk pool, and this will create a positive price cycle. Whereas in Australia here, it is more common to see the use of upfront discount. And in fact, I believe nowadays, all the major life insurers do rely on large upfront discount to promote sales. And the first year discount can go as high as 30%. But when the discount unwinds, it will typically trigger lapses from healthy lives. And that will leave the remaining pool worse off by having worse claim experience. And this will push up the price, and they will create a vicious cycle instead. And in addition, if a healthy life repurchase another life insurance policy, then it will mean that for the life insurers, they will encounter another large acquisition cost. And this will make the overall life insurance policy more expensive and also makes the process inefficient. In Australia, we do have the wellness program, but this needs some refinements and itself can be a separate topic. And in the UK, one of the major life insurers introduced the distribution quality management framework. And this is proven to be quite efficient in managing lapse. And then this is adopted by all the remaining life insurers in the UK market. So under this framework, insurers will track lapses, early claims, and also non-disclosures by different advisor groups. And they will restrict some groups with poor behaviors and outcomes. So in Australia, although some life insurers already conduct similar analysis, but I believe a formal DQM framework is not widely adopted. And in the Australian market, we probably need some rewarding mechanism because of the heavy reliance on the IFA channel. Canada and US effectively use the surrender charges to discourage early lapse for investment type products. However, in Australia, surrender value is not a commonly used feature. This is mainly because of the strict regulation that makes this feature quite expensive in the market. It is also important to understand the difference in product and distribution channels used across market. So we have learned that for whole of life insurance, it is quite strong across all market except in Australia here. It is perceived as both a protection and a saving product. So with a death benefit paid early on, which is for protection purpose, or a cash value withdrawal later if protection is no longer needed. Investment products are popular across various countries. So for example, in Canada and US, they have a very large universal life market, which is quite popular and profitable. So universal life is another permanent life type of product similar to whole of life, but with more flexibilities around your premium structure, sum insured amount, and investment options. And nowadays, the index universal life, where your cash value will track a certain market index, for example, S&P 500, is very popular in US and Asian market. Hong Kong has a very mature participating market, and the mainland China sees the growth in product where your sum insured will increase with investment returns. In terms of living benefits, it is interesting to see that this is actually quite smaller in scope internationally compared to what we have here in Australia. So in South Africa and China, simplified trauma is gaining traction online, and this is because of the easy access. In US, probably the primary living benefit or the only living benefit is a long-term care product, which nowadays is only offered as a rider to whole-of-life product. TPD standalone is quite rare. It is more common as an acceleration of death, and DI is quite small globally, but it's seeing growth in the UK market and only mature in the South African market. For distribution channel, all markets use a mix of direct and advisor model. One difference is that actually customers in the international markets, they don't need to pay explicit advisor fees. So this cost is implicit in the premium. Whereas in Australia here, I think most of the customers do need to pay thousands of out-of-pocket fees to the advisors. So what does all this mean to the actual lapse rates? Canada does publish lapse by different products and policy durations. As you can see, there are some quite high shock lapses at the end of the term, about 50%. And this is a reflection of the sudden increase in premium after the guaranteed term. However, the focus here is actually the lapse rate level within the term. And if you look at that, for T10, it has an average lapse of around 5 to 7%. T20 has a lower lapse at 3%, and whole of life has long-term lapse below 1%. In the internet, other markets, although data isn't always available, but talking to actuaries working UK, US, and China, they all suggested that their long-term lapse rates are at the single-digit level. The exception is in South Africa, where lapse rates are quite high, but this is mainly because of the economic volatility that we're seeing in that country. In Australia here, we also, APRA also publishes lapse in the industry, and we see that the Australian retail market has an average lapse rate around 15%, which is significantly higher than most of the international market. So this implies that a customer in the international market, except in South Africa, is more likely to hold on to their policy, which is a reflection of potential higher trust levels in those markets. So in summary, what we have learned is that the international markets have a much more certain and stable premium structure. And this is reflected by the market offering guaranteed level premiums, limited payment terms, and also wellness-linked discounts. And in contrast, in Australia here, we have steeper premium structures, which is reflected by a dominated non-guaranteed step premium with frequent repricing and unwinding of large upfront discount. There are also some active and efficient lapse management strategies that are adopted internationally. For example, the use of wellness program, the DQM framework, and also the use of surrender charges. Although some of these strategies already exist in Australia, those need some refinements and wider adoptions for them to be truly effective. In terms of products, the international market offers more traditional whole-of-life products or investment type of products, whereas in Australia here, we tend to offer more complex living benefits, for example, TPD and DI. So all of these factors are contributing to overall lower lapse rates in the international market, which is potentially a reflection of the higher trust levels in those markets. So far, we learned some practices in the international market and how these are used to build trust over time. And now if we shift our focus back to the Australian market and consider our uniqueness and challenges, then we think, how do we adopt some of those methods internationally to our current market here, to our local market here? So we think there are three areas of opportunities with the long-term aim of rebuilding trust. The immediate priority is a premium structure reform, and this is because the current model introduced a very steep premium curve, and that really undermines customers' trust. And we think it's important to fix this foundation first before we focus on growth. And this will be the focus for today's presentation. And in the midterm, we see the potential of rethinking about distribution and products to better meet evolving customer needs. And in the long term, the aim is to rebuild trust, because trust is not just a nice to have in this market. It is really the foundation for this industry to grow. And also, it's not just for today's product, but also for any future opportunities. For example, annuities for retirement planning, which requires very strong level of trust for the product to work. And also in the increasingly uncertain world like we are in today, people may demand more certainties, and life insurance has a role to play. But if we don't manage to rebuild trust, then the industry is not in the position of seizing these opportunities. For the premium structure reform, we have thought about four areas of improvement. So the first being promoting level premiums with various term options. Second is to introduce guaranteed features. Third is to limit upfront discount. And fourth is to improve premium transparencies. And for each of the four areas, we have considered the specific challenges that we'll be facing if we want to make these changes in the current Australian retail market. And despite the challenges, if there are any opportunities exist, and also what are the outcomes in terms of lapse and trust if we manage to make these changes. We also consider the overall implications to the industry if we manage to reduce lapse. Because of the limited time we have today, we'll only be talking about promoting level premiums and also the overall implication, but happy to discuss other aspects offline. So what are the challenges of us promoting level premium in the current Australian retail market? It is simply that it's seen unpopular by both customer and advisors. So from the customer's point of view, it is perceived to be quite expensive. And this can be seen by looking at a model point. And in this case, if we look at a 45-year-old male non-smoker with a 500K death benefit without indexation, then we can do a comparison of the annual premium between a step premium structure and a level premium to age 65 structure. The first observation is that level premium has a very high entry price. So this is as high as four times that of step premium. And also step premium often come with large upfront discount. So the gap between the two premium type is actually even wider. The crossover points between the two premiums only happen after 10 years. So this indicates that the level premium is more expensive than step for more than 10 years. And this is because of the exponential increasing nature of the step rates. However, when looking at cumulative price, which is the total price that a customer will pay, and if we look at this up to age 65, the level premium actually has a lower cumulative price. And in this example, that's about 20% lower than step premium. But this information is not always available to the customer, so level premium is still perceived to be quite expensive. There's also a structural issue, and this can be seen if we extend the level to age 65 premium beyond age 65. then you will see that for all the Australian life insurers, we are converting level premium to step premium at older ages. And this is because of our regulation. So LPS 360 requires a level policy with term greater than 15 years and expiry age greater than 70 to have minimum surrender value calculation. And this calculation is prescribed, and that makes the feature very expensive in the market. So all life insurers try to avoid the provision of surrender value by making this conversion to step premium. So that results in level premium being not truly level. From advisor's perspective, because level premiums are not guaranteed and it's subject to increase over time, it is very hard for advisors to promote level premium and meet the best interest obligation. Despite these challenges, we still see some potential opportunities in this market, and we think the Australian market should go with a gradual approach. And this is because we observe that Australia has the history of driving down the entry price over time. So starting from the unbundling of risk and investment product to the introduction of step premium and nowadays the use of large upfront discounts. So all of these actions are to drive down the entry price to promote sales. So because of that history, we think it's more feasible to go with a gradual approach in this market. One option is to introduce flatter premium step premium curve, which is already seen in the market. And this is basically spreading the increase more evenly towards level structure to reduce shock. Another option is to introduce the UK-style guarantee premium with various term options. And in the Australian market, we can start with a shorter term, for example, just 10 years and 15 years, just to gain experience first. And we think it's important to have some level of guarantees within the term. Probably the level of guarantee will depend on the different product types, but we think some guarantee feature is necessary. And at the end of the term, it is probably preferable that we just let the policy to expire instead of renewing into another level term or another step premium structure. And this is to promote simplicity and transparency, and also to avoid the shock lapse situation that we've seen in the Canadian market or the low take-up rate issue that we've seen in the US market. It is also important to provide the full projection of the premium so the crossover point between the two premium can be clearly shown, and also to disclose cumulative price so customers know exactly how much they will pay in total. To truly offer level, LPS 360 need to be reviewed for the minimum surrender value calculation. And I also think once the market is ready to adopt surrender value, then it potentially opens another opportunity of reintroducing investment product. So for example, the universal life product, which is quite popular in US and Canada. So this product has quite a flexible premium structure, and you can structure your premium in the way that you leverage on the investment return to offset your increasing incidence cost, because both are exponential increase. And that could result in overall lower cumulative price. And in the meantime, for post age 70, we could adopt the Canada's approach, but only renewing to another 15 years of level premium. But this does come with shock lapse risk. So if the Australian market can adopt this gradual shift to offer flatter step premiums and also some guaranteed level premium with various options, then it really builds the credibility, which is a key component in the trust formula. So it really builds the credibility with customers because they will find pricing become more predictable and transparent, and that will help to rebuild trust and ultimately reduce the lapse rates. So what does it mean for the overall industry if we manage to make this premium structure reform? If we look at the recent APRA statistics, then you'll see that the number of insured policy has been reducing over time since 2018. And in fact, there is a 20% reduction over that five years period, despite the fact that the need for life insurance probably didn't change, if not increasing over that period. But if we can manage to reduce lapse in to an internationally comparable level, for example, 5% as what we see in the Canadian market, then instead of a 20% reduction, we'll see a 20% growth instead. And this is a dramatic shift, and it really changed the outlook of the industry. And with that, I'll hand back to Adrian for a final recap.
All right. Thank you, Ludi. So just very, very quick recap before we jump into questions. So we've heard about how trust is incredibly important for the industry, but we may not, particularly on premiums, be doing a particularly great job of managing it and building it. We heard a lot about different options. You know, there's been a lot of noise. I've mentioned that letter from APRA during last week. There's actually a lot of solutions globally, and there's a lot of things that have happened globally that we can look to sort of understand what the implications would be. There is definitely some challenges, though, around doing it. You know, people don't necessarily like doing guarantees. There's some regulatory challenges. You know, we always run into the risk around perceived collusion and things like that if we do things through the industry bodies. So there is a few challenges. But if you look at the potential size of the benefit for us, you know, we're all working every day with shrinking books, dealing with expense challenges and everything else. But if premiums can really lead to that sort of level of a difference in terms of retention and growth and sort of coverage of the market, like the benefits for all of us are absolutely huge. So we think that this is a really big priority for the industry, and one that if we tackled in the right way with the right mindset will have huge benefits for our customers, different stakeholders in the industry, and obviously ourselves as employees of companies. So thank you.
Some great food for thought there today. I've got a question. I will invite you to come up to the microphone in the middle of the room and answer that, ask any questions. I've got two come through on the iPad as well. And Ben and Etienne, if you'd like to come up and ask them verbally, you're welcome to too. But I've got a question to start with for Ludi. You've talked about guaranteed premium, recommended guaranteed premium in the market. How do you address the high capital requirement issues around this?
Yeah, thanks, Julia. I think that's a very relevant question. So I think it is right that with guaranteed features, it will mean that we're limiting our ability to reprice. So it will be subject to high mispricing risk, and that will result in higher capital requirements. But I think that guarantee feature is such an important feature to rebuild trust in the industry. So it is very crucial for actuaries to really understand the cost of guarantees. And in fact, I've asked this question to actuaries working in all the other global markets, and none of them suggested that guarantee feature has a problem to their capital requirements. And this is also the case for Canada, which is believed to have very strong capital regime. And I guess also with the guarantee feature, you will see lower lapse rates, which actually will reduce your capital requirements. So the total impact on capital may not be as significant as it seems. Also, I think the Australian market could adopt shorter term guarantees, for example, just 10 years or 15 years, just to gain experience first and try to understand the implication on capital. And also for complex living benefits like TBD and DI, probably full guarantees are not a feasible solution because we have very comprehensive product designs and we still need to have a good understanding of the underlying claim experience. So for these products, probably only partial guarantees are feasible. So for example, it could take the form of limiting the repricing amount or the frequency just to reduce shock and spreading your increase like over time to better meet customers' expectations. So I think that with these more gradual approaches, it will help manage the capital requirement issue. Yeah.
Just one thing to add to that. Like, if all we do is different types of premium charging that all involve effectively charging a customer more in the short term, that's not a very compelling proposition for a financial planner. But if there's a really credible guarantee in place, it actually gives them something to focus on, and it's guaranteed and it won't change. And you can then have a conversation around, well, do you want to pay less in the short term, but potentially more in the long term, and so on. So to actually get truly compelling alternatives to what we currently do, I think we need to do something.
We've got another question around the higher lapse rates in Australia compared to other countries and whether there's any factors like cultural differences, social welfare, risk aversion contributing to those higher lapse rates.
That's something I didn't look into. But I guess, yeah, it could be right that there will be some cultural differences. For example, my understanding is for the global markets, they have heritage taxes. So that is probably one of the factors that really attracts sales in terms of life insurance policies in other markets. Whereas in Australia here, we don't have this. I guess another reason we have quite high lapses compared to other markets is because of the complex living benefits that we offer in this market, which to me is really a feature that makes Australian market quite unique in the international market. So the international market, they are focused more on like death benefits, traditional whole of life, and some investment features, whereas we focus more on complex living benefits. And because of the complication and the comprehensiveness, I guess naturally there will be more need for understanding of the underlying claim experience, and there will be more repricing going on, and that will really drive the lapse rate, higher lapse rates.
Question around understanding appetite of Australian consumers in paying for these additional features, paying those higher premiums. Is there any research or studies or surveys that give us a sense of that appetite to pay a higher amount?
It's a good question. Definitely worth some consumer research on that to understand. I guess, you know, we know that people will take out a fixed rate mortgage and will pay fixed rates on their home loans, even though it's typically more expensive. Sometimes they're arbitraging what they think will happen, but like there is demand. I don't know if you can count this as research, but we have talked to a few advisors around the concept to get their views, and they sort of, what they said was they wouldn't necessarily recommend level guaranteed for everyone or for all cover, but they might say you have a base level of 100,000 a cover that you need for 20, 30, 40 years. Take that as guaranteed and then take the cheaper rate than the others. So like, I think ultimately, like Peter Chun talked about personalization, everyone's going to be different. And the financial advisors would have a really big role to play in doing that.
Any suggestions to overcome first mover challenge?
I think if someone does a genuine guarantee and goes out and explains it to financial advisors, they will be able to find financial advisors who will support it. And once some volume of sales start coming through, people will follow quickly. It's not like offering a lower rated product on the, like on the definition side, that just can't be recommended. And, you know, some people have already done some of the things we've seen, and, you know, hopefully they're seeing some success already.
Do you think guaranteed premium is feasible for more complex living benefits like TPD or trauma?
Yeah, I think it's a very good question. So in short, I don't think full guarantees is feasible for complex living benefits in this market. As I said, we already see a lot of repricing going on, and the reason behind is because we have very comprehensive product design. We still need to understand the claim experience better. So I don't think a full guarantee is feasible. But at the same time, I do think some level of guarantee will help to rebuild trust with the customers. So this could take the form of limiting the repricing amount or the frequency just to spread your increase more evenly over time, and that action will actually help with rebuilding trust. Yeah.
Like, it's an interesting question. We're all worried about TPD and TPD experience and mental health and TPD. So potentially part of the solution is you could have guaranteed, you know, physical injury, TPD disability products, and non-guaranteed mental health type products. And you could, you know, you do things like that to differentiate. So sort of all there to be worked on, I think.
How do you rate Superfund's chances of successfully delivering simple advice to their members under DBFO, given the inherent mistrust of free advice that's come through in your research?
We should get Peter Chun back on stage for answering this one. He had, who was at a session this morning? He had 150 advisors giving out the three different tiers of advice. I think people are more likely to trust their Superfund already to begin with if they're... if the nudges and other things are happening at the right point in time, and then the right model is there. I think most funds are talking about an element of free advice or guidance or help through to guidance and then full advice that you pay for. So I'm not sure funds, for the most part, give that much free advice. Like, there's normally an intra-fund charge or something, so, and they still have all the regulatory obligations to go with it.
Well, we are out of time, but thank you, Adrian and Ludi, for a very informative session.